What is up, everybody? Welcome to the Rehearsal Report. We are kicking off season two in style with a really exciting project. The next few episodes, we'll be hosting members of the creative team of Lightbringer, a new musical written and developed throughout the last year that will be premiering in just a few weeks. So we're going to take you inside the process and help you learn all the ins and outs of creating new work. It's going to be a really great time, and I am so excited. Today, for our first episode, we are joined by the composer and creator of Lightbringer, Nick O'Brien. Welcome to the podcast, Nick.
Thanks.
So before we get started, can you tell our audience a bit more about Lightbringer and what they can expect from this show?
Yeah, so Lightbringer, it's a new take on an old story. It's the story of Lucifer from the Bible, where we find out in Lightbringer that he wasn't supposed to be cast out of heaven. He wasn't supposed to be cursed. Michael, as the jealous younger brother, imprisoned their father and did all of this, saying that it was on God's orders. And as a horrible dictator up in heaven, Michael is starting to cause all sorts of larger scale problems. So Lucifer has to decide whether or not he should try and be the hero for a change.
Oh, I love that. I'm so excited. So here the rehearsal report, because we are your theater people through and through, we're going to start off with a bit of an icebreaker before we get into the questions. So
Okay. What
is your favorite color?
Oh, that's a tough one. Nobody's asked me that in forever. I'm going to have to go basic and say black.
I like it. It's honest. What was the last thing that you ate today?
Last thing that I ate today was some leftover beef stew.
Nice. And finally, I'd like you to tell me a little story about the closest object to you.
Closest object to me is my giant water bottle that I bought off of Amazon about 3 years ago, because I have a habit of forgetting to drink throughout the day. And I figured if I had this gigantic water bottle right next to me all the time, I don't have to worry about getting up to get a new cup, and we'll just have something right there to drink.
A lot of people's closest object to them has been some sort of drinking device, which I have found very funny. I like hearing everyone's stories about their water bottles.
Yeah.
So we're going to start at kind of the beginning of your theatrical journey. So when did theater first become like a force in your life? When did you first start getting into making music and making shows?
Well, I've been making music since I was 3 years old. My parents started me with violin lessons when I was 3 years old. But it was always just something I did until I was 12. And in county orchestra, we played a medley from Pirates of the Caribbean. And it was the first time I ever played music where I was like, oh my God, that's awesome. Wait a second. I could do that. So from then on, it was pretty much, I am going to write music for film. And I was doing that whole time, still really involved in a lot of theater stuff. And then partway through college, I realized that even though it was a lot of great fun writing for film, I just liked the process of writing for theater a lot more, like the freedom that I had with it, the time frame that there was where I didn't have a 2-week deadline where I had to worry about, and just sort of decided from there that that's what I was going to do. Mm-hmm. I had been involved in theater for a bunch of years. First big theater memory I have was when I was, I think, 6 or 7, when I saw Lion King on Broadway. And I'm sure that's a lot of people's first theater memories too. But no, I was really involved in pit orchestra since I was in junior high school. I went to performing arts theater camp, French Woods.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I was really involved in the music department there, but as someone so involved in the music department, I also did 4 or 5 pit orchestras every summer. So the inner workings of that was always something that I was very involved in. And the more time I spent there, the more time I just realized it was what I was supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what was your major in college? Just remind me.
Yeah, I studied music composition.
Okay.
I was a music composition major.
Mm-hmm. I think it's not something that a lot of people think is a feasible major, you know?
With music composition, I always like to joke around about it that there's really two things you can do with a music composition degree. You can either go into academics or you could sell out and go mainstream. and so I like to think that I sold out and went mainstream.
I like that. That's really funny. So you've kind of touched on this a little bit, but so discovering that you wanted to be a composer, it was more of a gradual process for you, or was it kind of was there an aha moment where you're like, this is what I need to do with my life?
I'd say it was both kind of gradual and also an aha moment for me. When I was young, taking violin and viola lessons, I always had a lot more fun doodling around, making up my own stuff rather than playing the material that my teacher wanted me to work on. But the big aha, this is what I have to do with my life moment was the one I mentioned earlier when we did Pirates of the Caribbean in County Orchestra that one year.
Nice. So you get to college, you decide you're going to be a music composition major. You walk through those doors. What was the experience? How did it differ from anything that you imagined it being like in your head? Or what surprised you about your educational experience?
The biggest thing that surprised me was how nice the violinists at school were. I do think of myself as a violist at this point. I did switch to viola partway through high school and have continued on with that. Where I grew up in junior high school, county orchestras, the youth orchestra I was a part of, the violinists' mindset is one of very cutthroat, very competitive natures. And so to go to Ithaca College then, where it's like, oh my God, these violinists are congratulating each other. They're nice to each other. What is going on here? So I definitely say that was the biggest surprise to me.
That's so funny. Oh my gosh. So yeah, full disclosure, we went to the same college. Yeah. I'm in the Department of Theater. Nick was in the School of Music. So I think it's kind of an interesting place in that those two things are separate, but there is a lot of room for overlap. We obviously collaborate a lot. So you kind of got a taste of the theater world, even though you were focused in the School of Music and working in composition there. So can you talk to me about that overlap for you?
Well, to me, as a composer, there's a lot more of an inherent overlap than there is for other majors, except maybe voice majors. Mm-hmm. Because as a composer, our whole thing is telling a story. We're telling a story with our music, and performance majors, performance majors are almost like actors in a way, where they're taking material that someone else has written and telling their take on the story with it, with their interpretation of what's on the page. But as a composer, we're the ones who are writing the stories. We're coming up with the stories for the musicians to tell. And so me, there was just, for me, there was just a lot of that inherent overlap where different instruments versus acting, text on a page versus music on a page. It's really the same thing where it's all just storytelling.
Yeah. I'd never thought of that before. I love the idea of musicians are actors in their own right. I love that way of phrasing it. So did you find that your desires to compose, for theater were generally supported in in your educational experience, or was that more of a path that you carved out for yourself?
That was definitely a path I carved out for myself. Mm-hmm. For most of my time at college, I had one of two composition professors, both of whom are absolutely fantastic. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't have traded my education with them for anything else. But neither one of them really had any experience with the kind of stuff that I was doing. Mm-hmm. So it was where theater, it's a lot more song oriented than classical music. So while they really helped me with a lot of the fundamentals and foundation of music composition that I think someone needs to have for whatever they're going to do with it, where I chose to focus was not their specialty. So it was a lot of discovering things for myself, or having things be a mutual learning rather than them teaching something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So were you writing, did you find you were writing stuff in your free time, like outside of class, or where would you, did you have the opportunities to explore that and to see that work come to life while you were in school, or was it something that happened after? Yeah,
definitely. Well, with composition, it's not so much class, whereas you'll have a lesson every week where you go over stuff that you've written and learn more about the craft based off of what you've done, not too dissimilar from like an actress masterclass or something like that.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But I had a lot of opportunities to see what I was doing come to life. Twice a semester, there would be a composition studio performance recital. And I would always make as much of a point as I could to get as much of my stuff on those recitals as I could. I'm a very firm believer that if you are going to compose music, there is no better way to learn than to have your music performed. You can have these ideas in your head, but until you hear what they actually are practically, there's no way to learn what to expect from writing something out on the page.
Yeah.
And then of course there was my senior recital where I had the first musical that I wrote premiered. It was a one act musical where again, I did both the music and the script for that. And that was a fantastic learning experience as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have playwright friends that say similar things, but sometimes you just need to be able to hear it. It can exist
absolutely on
the page, but
yeah, just like when
having a bunch of people in your life that would just be like you can call up and be like, hey, can you read my play out loud? Like,
yeah,
is a similar feeling in music?
It's totally the same because like I do have, obviously I'm the writer for Lightbringer as well. I do have that experience on both sides of things, and it's absolutely the same where you don't, until you have enough of that experience, you don't know if this line is going to sound as good when someone is speaking it, and you don't know if that line is going to sound as good when someone is playing it on their instrument.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So great transition. Let's talk about Lightbringer a bit. Where did the idea for this show come from for you, and how have you gone about bringing it to life in these unusual circumstances?
Yeah, well, I'd kind of been kicking the idea around for about 3.5 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea really came out of, I like to contribute the idea to two things. The first thing I like to contribute it to is the fact that I am Jewish. And a big part of that for me is, okay, great, this is what we've been told, but why is it that way?
Yeah.
How do we know that that's correct? And so with that, it's okay, all the Bible and the Torah and the Quran and everything all say that Michael is the sword of God, the great warrior of heaven, and Lucifer is the devil. But how do we know that's true? We're told that's true because it's what we've been told. And the other big thing with it that it just sort of came out of was I have always just been really interested in various mythologies from around the world, the Judeo-Christian, Islamic stuff, Greek, Roman, Norse, Hindu. Mm-hmm. I just love mythology.
Nice. So how have you gone about, was the process like bringing the team together to make this idea come to life?
So I am incredibly lucky to have some really great friends, particularly our producer, Ari, who took such an interest in the project and who had resources and connections that I did not have, and who were just really, really determined to help me get this thing off the ground and get it going.
Yeah, amazing. And Paul, your director, who I've known for quite a few years now, just the best. I'm talking with Tiffany, the costume designer, next week for an episode. It just seems like everything kind of came together at the perfect time for you guys.
Yeah. Well, I mean, part of it was a blessing and a curse with the pandemic. Curse in that we are doing this in a brand new medium that's still being, the how-tos are still being explored, and it's not being presented in the form that it is intended for, but a blessing is in we get to explore new territory. We get to have talent, whether it be cast or crew, from literally all over the world. Mm-hmm. And people are just rearing at the bit for something to work on, and we're able to give them something to work on.
Yeah. So do you think that, I mean, it's hard to speculate about what's going to happen when/if this gestures broadly is all over, but do you think these kinds of things will continue happening for playwrights and for composers, like these opportunities to workshop online, or would you like to see that sort of thing continue? Or it's a tough question. I know.
I absolutely think it's going to continue. Personally, I'm a bit of a traditionalist myself. I like when things are done live. Not that it is something I would rule out to do again at some point in the future. It just is not the thing that I would necessarily choose to jump to next, whether that's because it's what I'm currently working on, I can't really say. But I absolutely think that it's something that's going to continue. It's a really great way for people who might not otherwise get to work together, whether it's different writers collaborating on things or cast members or crew members who might not otherwise have a chance to work together or even meet each other, make all sorts of great connections all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So going back to education for a bit, now that you're a bit removed from your formal education, is there anything about the system that you would change, like as someone who studied the arts and is now working with a career in the arts?
Well, as a music composition major, my education was incredibly focused. You as a music composition major, you do not have the time in your schedule to really do anything outside a degree. You're taking 9, 10, 11 classes a semester.
Yeah.
And they're pretty much all for your degree. They're all requirements.
Yeah. Is it a BFA program or
BM?
BM. Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's a BM program. Yeah. But the biggest thing I would change about it is I would expand what is studied as a music composition degree. So much of the focus is, as we like to call it in the music world, like on the dead white men. and there's a lot of really great stuff to be learned from the Western classical tradition. Yeah. There really is. It's a great foundation for a lot of stuff. But both in terms of non-Western music and also non-classical music, folk music from around the world, various types of modern stuff as far as pop, rock, jazz, everything goes. There's a lot that we could be learning that we're not, that I think would make us better rounded artists in pretty much every way.
Yeah. I see that in more theater educations too. Like it's very much sometimes structured like, oh, here's the day we learn about the women, and here's the day we learn about queer artists, and here's the day we learn about artists of color instead of learning it all side by side.
Yeah, I mean, what's the difference between, let's say, the Middle Eastern or Indian music tradition versus the Western classical music tradition? Neither has any more or less value than the other.
Yeah.
It's just we're taught one and then we're taught the others are these exotic things that are maybe brushed over once in a lecture.
So what do you think was the most important thing you learned in your education that's helping you now in your career?
Most important thing I learned in my education that is helping me. Don't ask someone to do something you're not prepared to do yourself, and don't be afraid to ask for help with something that you don't know how to do.
That's amazing, because I think a lot of artistic people need to hear that sometimes.
No, it's when you're putting on a composition recital or you're having your senior composition recital or whatever, if you're asking all these people to put in all this work, but then you're planning on just sitting back and watching, that's not really fair to them. You need to be putting in just as much work, if not more, than they are. And as a composer, the other one goes hand in hand too, because you can't play every instrument. Even if you are a multi-instrumentalist like myself, like, you physically can't play everything at once. you have to learn how to reach out to other people when you need help with something or something you can't do, and learn how to collaborate with different people, not only in different instruments, but different fields. I've worked on a lot of the composition studio recitals. I worked with actors a number of times, communicating with stage crew on how you want your stuff set up. It's all a lot of learning how to communicate and work with people who you need help from.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. I had a artistic director once that told me that your dream as a creative should be surrounded by people that are smarter than you are.
Oh,
smarter
totally,
in being.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can be the most talented writer, composer, whatever in the world, but if you don't know how to surround yourself by people who can do the jobs you can't do, you're never going to get anywhere.
For sure. All right, we are just about ready to wrap up. But before we do, we are introducing something new on season two of the Rehearsal Report that I like to call the lightning round. So I'm going to ask you some very quick questions. What is your favorite musical?
Ragtime and Hadestown.
Oh, fantastic choices. What's your favorite show you've ever worked on, or your favorite piece you've ever worked on in your case?
Favorite show I was ever involved in was Jekyll and Hyde. Favorite piece I ever played was, I'm going to have to go with Finlandia by Sibelius.
Lovely. What's the weirdest thing that's ever happened to you on a production or in rehearsal or what have you?
You know, I haven't had a ton of weird experiences. I'm going to say I'm lucky there. I'd probably have to say the weirdest thing that ever happened, not exactly weird, just unfortunate, on my senior recital for the one act musical, the wireless microphone headsets bugged out. So we had to do the entire musical with everyone holding a handheld mic.
Oh, that's unfortunate. And then the last question, which is something that we talk about quite a bit on this podcast. Have you ever been involved with production of the musical Annie? And if so, has it been traumatizing at all?
You know, I have. I was in the pit orchestra for Annie back at French Woods many moons ago. I can't say it was horribly traumatizing. Actually, you know, yes, I can. The theater we were performing in, there's one of two main stages at French Woods, and anyone who's been to French Woods will know what I'm talking about with the play. And it gets hot in there. And you're sitting in the pit. and it's even hotter. And we could not have fans hooked up in there, because if we had too many extension cords, we would short circuit the theater.
Oh my God.
So we had to sit there. It was 95 degrees outside, which meant it was about 120 degrees in the pit. So that was awfully traumatic.
Yeesh, that does not sound fun. Yeah, I believe that 90% of all theater / music artists have been involved in something traumatic surrounding Annie. So you're contributing to valuable scientific research. And fantastic. Although I'm very sorry it happened to you. So thank you so much for joining us today, Nick.
Thanks for having me.
Where can our audience find you, find out more about your work?
Yeah, so you can follow Lightbringer on Instagram at Lightbringer New Musical, and you can also find us on Facebook and Twitter under the same name. I am also on Instagram at Synesthesia Composer, and on Facebook as Nick O'Brien Composer. Same thing with Twitter, Synesthesia Composer, actually SynComp there. And we are currently selling tickets for Lightbringer. They are $7 for a regular ticket, $9 for a ticket plus admission to the talk back. And there is an option to donate $2 extra to both tier, and all donations for that are going right to the Actors Fund.
Amazing. And all of that information is linked in the podcast description if you want to check it out. And as for us, you can always find us on Instagram at The Rehearsal Report Pod. If you ever want to write in, suggest any guests that you want to hear from on this podcast, or just people you want to hype up who are making cool theater, email us at therehearsalreport@gmail.com. So thank you all so much for listening today. And never forget, whoever you are and wherever you are, theater is not an impossible career, and you are not alone in these crazy dreams, I promise. We'll see you next week.